All right, welcome to episode 207 of the Murder Master Music Show. We have a special guest with us in the house tonight. He was not only production manager and stage manager at Ruthless Records, but he was also assistant manager under Jerry Heller and Eazy-E himself. None other than Gary Ballin. This is welcome to the show. This is a huge honor for us to have you here. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm loving life. Everything's great. I'm looking at the ocean right now, so that's good. And it's nice having my 15 minutes of fame back from 35 years ago, or whenever it was.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy now. You got all these young hipsters jumping on the NWA bandwagon, and I'm sitting over here looking at my 1990 100 miles and running that I got in 7th grade. You know what I'm saying? So it's... But it's blown up, man, all over again. How does that make you feel, knowing that you were part of that?
Pretty emotional, actually. You know, because Jerry used to talk about this group way before the records were out, and we're cousins, so I've known them my whole life. And just to see and be a part of the whole thing is pretty mind-boggling, and I loved... 90% of it I loved, and 10% of it was totally insane.
Now, tell the people exactly what your relation is to Jerry Heller.
Well, Jerry's my first cousin. My mother and his father, brother, and sister. And we grew up in Cleveland, Shaker Heights, Cleveland, Ohio. I actually was born in the same hospital that all the Bone Thugs and Harmony guys were born in. You know, which is kind of funny. So I've known Jerry my entire life. And when I was a junior in high school, I lived in Ohio, in Columbus, and I was going into my senior year, and I came out to L.A. and stayed with Jerry. At the time, he was a big-time agent, music agent for the Guess Who and the Grassroots and Marvin Gaye and all these groups, and I came out and stayed with them back then, and I've always been a musician myself, so I was pretty fascinated with that whole life and that whole world. And I've known him my entire life, and we still talk all the time.
Now, that's, did I get your job description at Ruthless accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty close to it. I started as a production manager and stage manager. I was managing a heavy metal band at the time called Hurricane, and we had a deal, and we sold a couple hundred thousand records, and we were on tour, and everything was going great. It was the first band I ever managed, and then out of nowhere they fired me, and they went to Rod Stewart's managers. One of my buddies, who was Rod Stewart's road manager, stole them from me. And so when that happened, I called Jerry, and I told him what happened. He said, fuck those guys. Why don't you come on the road with NWA and EZ? You know, I want you to meet with Eric and the guys, and they're going to explain to you what kind of stage they want and what kind of sound they want, what kind of lights they want. And I had 10 years of road experience before that with Air Supply 3 years and a guy named Jeff Lorber, a jazz guy, and a girl named Lita Ford, and Hurricane, so I had a lot of road experience. So he brought me in to meet with those guys, and they explained to me what kind of staging they wanted. You know, I want, you know, the trash cans with fire coming out of it here. I want the chain link fence back here. I want the police tape over here. You know, I want the two rises with the two go-go girls up here. So I basically knew how to hire the companies to build those things, and that was it.
So, yeah, I mean, your job, I mean, it was very, very important. You got to see Eazy-E pretty much every day, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. I loved Eazy from day one till the last day I saw him. I loved working for him. He was funny. He was a great guy. He was a badass. I saw him knock this 300-pound guy out. Punch at a Michelet video shoot in Hollywood. And we were on the Howard Stern show together. And, you know, part of my jobs was, once the tour was over, was taking care of the baby's mamas and the kids, and anything Eric wanted, I had to do. Jerry made my life insane because I was on 24/7, and whatever Eric needed, I had to do pretty much. Because Jerry, it was real important to keep Eric happy and, you know, keep his life, you know, smooth.
And now let me ask you this, before I let my co-host Matt J take over for a while. Did you see the NWA movie?
Yeah, I saw it twice.
Okay, great. Was the depiction of Eazy-E correct, and was the depiction of Jerry Heller correct?
The movie was 75% right on, 25% total bullshit.
So the movie was pretty much bullshit then, huh?
No. 75% right, 25% bullshit, which isn't bad. That's not really bad for movies. And even the bullshit, you know, even the total lies that were in there, it was close. You know, it wasn't really what happened, but, you know, there are certain parts that never happened that they show. But a lot of it did happen. I mean, I was on every live shot, I was on that stage. You know, Jerry was only at one show. The rest, he was in L.A., and I was, you know, he wasn't in Detroit. He wasn't in Cincinnati. So they got him in shows that he wasn't at. He was in Houston. But, you know, so those kind of things didn't happen. The Detroit thing was close, but there were no, you know, cops talking to the group before the show. And there was no uniform cops there anyway. They boycotted the show. So all the cops there were plain clothes.
Right.
And also what happened with the boom, 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 like his gunshots, you know, those were firecrackers, probably set off by the plainclothes cops. And I was on stage when it happened, and also Ice Cube didn't have that little rap about, you know, him and Dre just went in to fuck the police. So we didn't have that little speech before, like it is in the movie, because I remember this, you know, very, very clearly. And I did see all these plainclothes cops. Once the fireworks went off, the crowd started freaking out, and all these guys started rushing the stage, and I see them hands going into jackets, and I see guns, you know, so, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I tell the group to run out the back door of Joe Louis Arena and go down the street, because our hotel was down the street. It was walking distance, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I said, stay in your rooms. You know, we'll sort this out later. And so what happened was, all these plainclothes cops, they run up on the stage, off the back of the stage, and they run right into LL Cool J's dressing room. Because they don't even know who they're going after. So a big fight breaks out backstage, and these guys are fighting LL Cool J's dancers, security. I mean, it was total chaos.
Damn. That had to be some wild times, man.
You know, that's the tip of the iceberg. There were so many wild times, it was hard to believe. That's why it was so much fun. But, you know, it got dangerous at times, too. But,
right.
It wasn't like the cops were waiting for him in the back, and they intercepted him and put him in the paddy wagon. You know, none of that happened. But I liked how, you know, what they did. You know, I loved the movie. I mean, I just loved the movie.
Cool.
Well, I've seen a lot of positive reviews. Obviously, I mean, people are already talking Oscar, and you know, but I've also seen a lot of people. You know, they felt that Eazy wasn't portrayed the way he should have been. They said that, you know, when he died, he wasn't on his way to being broke. And
that's true. That's total bullshit. You know, Eazy was so far from broke. He had lots of money. You know, there are things in the movie that they didn't talk about, like Mike Klein. Now, you know who Mike Klein is?
Huh.
Go ahead and learn.
Mike Klein was the guy that Jerry brought in when Suge was threatening to kill us every day to deal with Suge. And Mike Klein was our head of security, and he brought in Big Animal, and he brought in MD, he brought in his own group of guys, and Mike Klein was the one bad motherfucker. And once Klein came in, he dealt with Suge, and there were no more threats to us. And after that, they negotiated, you know, when you say Dre Day is easy payday, you know?
Yeah.
That's what happened. You know, Klein came in and dealt with Suge, and there was no more threats. And also the scene where Suge, you know, and his guys beat up Easy in the studio, that didn't happen either. What happened was Dre called Easy to squash the problem that was going on, and he said, meet me over at Solar, or whatever studio was, I think it was Solar, and Dre wasn't there, but Suge was there with all those guys, and they had ball bats, and they had, you know, pipes, and they said, we got people in front of your mama's house, and we got Jerry Heller in a van, and if you don't sign these release forms to release Dr. Dre, Michelle A, and the DOC, you know, we're going to beat you to a pulp and kill them.
And he pretty much had no choice. So Dr. Dre, you're basically saying Dr. Dre set him up.
Oh, of course, Dr. Dre set him up. Yeah, see, Dre and Ice Cube both turned on Easy. So, I mean, look at Dre, I give him all the respect in the world as far as his greatest producer in hip-hop ever. And, they, you know, with all this money he's made, he donated a lot of money to USC. So I'm great he's doing all that. And, you know, and he's, but in those days, you know, he totally turned on Easy. He wanted to be half owner of the company. So Suge and him started, plotting on how to, you know, either steal the company from Easy or have Easy give them half the company.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what happened there.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was wondering about, because everybody that I interviewed from Ruthless, everybody that we talked to, we always wanted to make sure, do you think it's going to be told fairly, being that it's being told pretty much by the two people that left versus...
Exactly. See, what the producers of this movie never did was talk to anybody that was close to Easy in the last 2 months of his life.
That's what I was about to ask you. Like, people were saying, like, Easy had fired Jerry right before he died. Was any of that, or even you, I heard he fired Jerry.
No. Here's what happened there. They said that Easy never came to Jerry's house. That whole thing about him coming to Jerry's and firing him and saying he did all this stuff, that never happened, okay? Total made that one up. What happened was there was a letter that was drafted that Easy signed that was sent to Jerry's house. That's how Jerry was fired. Okay? So I was fired after Easy died. You know, I wasn't fired before Easy died, and a couple of the guys, you know, in later years told me that Easy told Tamika to keep me on. Because, you know, I wasn't a political guy. I was just a worker. You know, I did what these guys needed to do. So I lasted, it was either a week or 2 weeks after Easy passed away is when Tamika came in and fired me. But Mike Klein also, he went from head of security to business affairs for Easy, head of business affairs. So he kind of worked his way in with Eric, and Easy liked him because, you know, the guy was he was real tough, and, you know, he could shoot the wings off of a fly, you know. I mean, you know, he was a badass guy, you know, and so Easy really liked him, and so Klein, you know, the way I saw it, Klein started wedging Jerry out of the picture, and Tamika was wedging Jerry out of the picture. So, you know, in both ears, you got Tamika in one ear and Mike Klein in the other, and, you know, that's kind of, you know, and Jerry and Easy weren't talking at the end at all. I was the go-between. Jerry was still running the company, but Easy would sign all the contracts, sign all the checks. And so Jerry would, you know, because he was the best businessman out of everybody. He knew the music business better than anybody, and he kept things rolling. So I was kind of the go-between.
What do you think about the people that would suggest that your cousin Jerry had something to do with Easy Death?
Well, you know, I always say follow the money.
That's exactly what Jerry said.
It's the truth. You know, you usually follow the money.
Right, it makes perfect sense. Like if somebody was trying to kill somebody, like I couldn't kill somebody that I wouldn't had nothing to gain off of it. You know what I'm saying? But that's what get a conspiracy with it. People just go any kind of way nowadays. You never know why motherfuckers do what they do. You know?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what was crazy is like one day. Jerry has checks and contracts, and it's the last time I ever met Easy. I mean, never saw Easy alive. And so he sends me over to Solly's in Woodland Hills, and I meet with him and Mike Klein. And I sat there, and we went over everything, and Jerry would always tell me, say, try to get Eric to just call me. I just want him so we can talk about the problem. You know, because, you know, Jerry loved Easy. I mean, Easy was like Jerry's kid. Easy was Jerry's whole world, kind of. So he felt terrible that this was going on. So I'm sitting there with Easy, you know, healthy as it can be. One month later, he is dead of full-blown AIDS, you know?
Yeah, that's fucked up.
It was unbelievable. And so... you know, everybody has their own conspiracy theories on how it all happened, you know, but I have my own too. And what I'm saying again, a lot of the people that Easy's assistants, Shari, Vinny, who lived in one of Easy's houses, none of these people ever were interviewed about what happened the last 2 months of Easy's life.
Yeah, pretty much not even... from what I was hearing early on, not even from his own children and shit, you know what I'm saying? Like, early on in the production of this movie, I remember seeing some of his children not pleased with, you know, them coming to them and asking about Easy. So that's what I always say, because I'm a huge Eazy-E fan, so we always got to look for, you know, I always wondered that too, why wasn't there a lot of input from the people that was with Eazy after N.W.A. actually broke up?
Exactly. And the other crazy thing is, when he got sick, the Nation of Islam basically protected him. Or, I should say, kept everybody else out. And Easy was never that fond of the, you know, of Muslims, because Ren was a Muslim. And Easy used to make fun of him all the time. So a lot of things happened that Easy would have never, ever done on his own. And the baby's mamas couldn't get up to see him. The babies couldn't get up to see him. We couldn't get up to see him. You know, I called the twins, Jacob and John Tobio, who were his two, you know, the two Samoan bodyguards, you know, because I really wanted to see him. I didn't know what was going on. And they said, nah, man, they're not letting anybody up. Don't even try to come up here.
That's horrible. That's horrible. And I mean, if he was like a son to Jerry, he would have been like a brother to you, pretty much. You know,
You know, if we were on Howard Stern was a big fan of mine. I mean, I was a big fan of Howard Stern, I should say. You know, and when we were in New York, I brought Easy on the show. And it was hilarious, you know, because this is when him and Dre were beefing, you know, and Howard was talking about having a fight between Easy and Easy and Dre and Snoop Dogg and BG Knockout.
I remember that.
It was really funny.
It's classic.
Me and Eric were close. Even when he was in the hospital, he wanted to use my phone card to call some of his girls because he didn't want Tamika knowing he was doing this. So I tell you, he, in my estimation, he would have never married Tamika ever. He had girls that he liked more than
So
she ended up with everything.
Do you think now when he signed, Jerry was on our show, he said that he didn't see his signature on the wedding certificate. All he, it was printed. Do you know anything about that? I mean, was
yeah, I saw the same thing Jerry saw. He didn't sign the wedding certificate at all.
Wow.
And I saw at the same time Jerry saw, you know, because, you know, we were together almost every day for years. And I was 24/7 with these guys. So when anything needed to be done, you know, and Jerry was so crazy. He made my life crazy because every single bill that came in, every credit card bill, everything from Easy, I had to go over every single one. What is business? What is personal? Who is this? Who did you fly here? You know, every month, Jerry, you know, he kept Easy's business straight. We had great accountants. We had smart guys. You know, and the whole thing about Jerry stealing and all that stuff, total bullshit.
So Jerry, we've had him on the show several times. Always been a nice guy. Always great to talk to. All the rumors about him. I mean, there's even Lazy Bone said that he believes Jerry Heller injected him with AIDS.
Yeah, well, Lazy Bone is Lazy Bone, you know. I mean, he drinks a lot. He smokes a lot. I love Lazy. I managed Flesh and Bone for 12 years. Okay, so, and I was a guy that took care of Bone Thugs and Harmony when they came to L.A. from Cleveland. My job was to move them from hotel to hotel because they'd get kicked out of every hotel we put them in. 3 or 4 days, get the call, got to move them somewhere else. I mean, they were so out of control. I mean, but they were so great. And they still are. I mean, I still stay in touch with Flesh, and I haven't talked to Lazy or Wish, but I talked to Busy not too long ago. But yeah, that was part of my job, too. You know, was to coordinate things for them.
And that's what people don't understand, that there's always somebody behind the scenes. Like, I wrote for magazines over the years, and I had much more responsibilities than just writing. I had to go out and get content. You know what I mean? I had to find the next article that was going to be hot or whatever. So there's people behind the scenes that help the machine run. And you're one of those guys. You help Ruthless, get off the ground. And there was a point in time when Ruthless was just taking over the game completely. At what point did it start to, you know, become aware to you guys that, okay, we're the targets now, and people want to take what we got?
Well, it's really when Shug came in the picture. I was managing a guy named Jimmy Z. Jimmy Z, harmonica, saxophone, flute player for Rod Stewart, the Eurythmics, Tom Petty, Etta James for 10 years, recorded. And this guy was a great player. And him and Dre were working on an album called Musical Madness. And Dre was producing, and Jimmy would, it was like hip-hop, jazz, funk. And so while they were recording the record, Shook started coming by Audio Achievements, the studio, you know, that they portray in the movie. and then Dre would leave, and they'd go in the car and talk for an hour. And they started plotting out, you know, how to get Dre out of the picture and start Death Row, basically. But the thing is, Dre was making lots of money. You know, every time Eric would, when they first started, Eric would buy a new house, Jerry would buy a new house, Dre would buy a new house. They'd all be neighbors. Then they'd buy a house where the DOC would get a house, which I think Jerry put up half the money for, and Michelet had a house. Then they moved to Calabasas where they had mansions. Easy had a mansion, Jerry was two doors down with a mansion, and Dre was the next street with a mansion. You know, and Dre was everyone was driving Beamers and Mercedes, and, you know, everybody was making money. Dre, to me, got greedy, and he really wanted to be half owner of the company because he was the producer. and he produced, you know, these hit records, but Easy owned the company. Easy was our Berry Gordy. You know, Jerry was his manager, and you know, Jerry managed it. Jerry could have owned half of Ruthless and didn't do it. So, you know, people that think Jerry stole in this stuff, Jerry could have had 50% of Ruthless, but that's not how, you know, it was set up, and Easy was always the boss.
Yeah.
Always made final decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. So you think there's obviously a lot of jealousy and animosity. Everybody wanted to be the Eazy-E.
Especially Ice Cube. You know, the stuff in the beginning was so true. You know, Ice Cube, man, and Ice Cube, you know, Ice Cube is an actor, you know. As you can see, he's an actor. And he, to me, he was acting back then, too. You know, he wasn't hard, he wasn't a bad dude, you know, but he had the scowl. And he was an amazing lyricist, an amazing rapper, you know. And he, you know, me being a production manager, I kind of oversaw all the interviews. And he was the only one that wanted to do interviews, and he was very prolific, you know, he spoke well, you know. So, but he was always jealous of Easy, because Easy got all the women. You know, I mean, Easy was like a Svengali. I mean, he had women, tall, skinny, fat, beautiful, ugly, whatever. They all wanted to be with Easy. And he was just such a nice guy. He was quiet, you know. He wasn't, you know, he was just himself. He was Easy. And Q was jealous of that, and he was jealous that Easy was the owner of the company. You know, so... That's you know, that beginning was, you know, partially true, but another thing you got to remember too is when you sign your first contract ever, they're never great contracts, you know. So for him to even get a check for $65,000, that was just the beginning, and Jerry didn't take Ice Cube Publishing or Dre's Publishing, you know. Everybody held on to their publishing. You know, so they got their money that way. Cube just wanted more.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be the star. He didn't want to be, you know, in a super group. He wanted to be the star, which he ended up doing a great job of.
Yeah, he became his own. I mean, you know, all credit due, whether he was a G or not, America's Most Wanted, you know, is always going to be a classic, you know. He put out a lot of good shit, but, you know, at the same token, I feel that he abandoned the people who gave him his start, you know. And I want to speak, and while we're on the subject of Cube, I got to talk about this. Jerry told us this, and Big Hutch told us this. We confirmed it with Big Hutch, which we didn't doubt Jerry, but we wanted to hear from the man who did it. And you, being the tour guy that was on tour with him, maybe you were there for this. Did Big Hutch beat the living shit out of Ice Cube, knocking him through a door?
You know what? I don't remember that happening. But everybody used to make fun of Ice Cube. You know, he was the one everybody clowned on. Because, like, he was the youngest. He took things more serious than, you know, these guys were drinking and smoking weed and, you know, just having fun. And Ice Cube was a lot more serious than everybody else.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I don't remember that, but, you know, if Hutch says it, I totally believe it.
Yeah, we got...
Greg, you know, I love Hutch. Another great guy. You know, I really liked him always and respected their group and, you know... It was cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Above the Law, classic group. Rest in peace to KMG, of course. But you know, like you said, this brings back good memories for you and mixed feelings and whatnot. Have you talked to Jerry since the movie is released?
Yeah, I'm Jerry's my cousin, and I helped him move. You know, so yeah, I mean, yeah, we talked a couple times, and. You know, and, you know, he feels the same way. Some of it was true, some of it was total lies and total bullshit. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that there is enough there for him to sue somebody so he can make some money, you know. And they portrayed him correctly in 70% of the movie. I mean, he did fight for those guys all the time.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get a record deal from anybody. And he went to all the major presidents of the companies, and nobody wanted to sign NWA or Eazy-E. But Brian Turner had his office in the same building that Jerry's office was on, I think it was Sunset and Cahuenga, like the CNN building. And that's kind of how that whole thing started, you know. And another thing that was bullshit, too, was the thing about Jerry coming up and wanting to meet Eazy, and that it was a complete other way around. Eazy tried to get Alonzo, who was the leader of the World Class Wrecking Crew, which Dre was in. Jerry was already managing Dre and Yella in the World Class Wrecking Crew. And Eazy, I think, gave him $650 or $750 to give to Alonzo for Jerry to meet Eazy, because Eazy wanted to meet Jerry. And Jerry used to play me when they first met, and I'm managing this heavy metal band. Jerry used to play me Straight out of Compton, Fuck the Police, Gangster Gangster, and I'm managing this heavy metal band, and I say, man, you are insane. I said, this shit is, it's crazy, you know. Nobody's gonna play it on the radio. You can't say Fuck the Police, you know.
Yeah.
And all this, and he says, you watch, this is going to be the biggest music ever. It's going to take over rock and roll. I mean, I got goosebumps right now because that's what he said, and I saw the whole thing happen.
And you know what's the sad part about it? Well, obviously, the biggest, you know, sad part about it is that Eazy's not here. But also that Jerry, without Jerry, Ruthless ain't getting off the ground, period. You know what I'm saying? Eazy needed the Jerry Heller, and Jerry Heller needed the Eazy-E, I believe. That's the way I look at it.
You're totally right, and that's what, and they said that in the movie, you know, which was good. You know, I mean, those parts of it were right. You know, Eazy needed Jerry to get them legitimate. You know, would Ice Cube be Ice Cube and a multimillionaire? Would Dre be a billionaire right now if it wasn't for Jerry? Who knows? But Jerry gave them the opportunity to have distribution, worldwide distribution, with a major record label.
Yeah.
And he gave them the ability to tour the U.S., you know. So these guys didn't know anything about any of that stuff, but Jerry knew a lot about it because he had many years, you know, in the trenches with some of the biggest acts in the world.
Yeah,
you know, he brought Elton John to the United States for his first gig at the Troubadour. He brought Pink Floyd to the United States for their first gig as an agent. So he's done some major things, but, you know, the nothing was as big as NWA and Eazy-E.
And that's very evident now with, what, 2 weeks in a row, number one at the box office?
Going on a third week.
But you know what I want to see, Gary and Mac J? I want to see an Easy Does It movie. I want to see a movie. I mean, of course, you got to incorporate NWA because that was part of them. But I want to see a movie solely about Easy.
Ruthless.
Would you? I mean, is that something you would like to see too, Gary?
Well, yeah, I'd like to know who's going to play me in the movie. But yeah, no, I would love to see what really happened at the end, because they don't mention so many things that were so serious at the end, like when Eazy gets AIDS and this lawyer Ron Sweeney, he reads this thing that Eric supposedly wrote, you know, to the people, you know, the kids and everything. Again, this is something Eric would have, so many things happened that Eric would have never in a million years done, and you don't hear anything about that.
Yeah, and what about all the charitable contributions that he made, to kids? I mean, there's video footage of him, you know, being a cowboy at a rodeo for kids, you know, helping kids and all kinds of stuff. Him at theme parks, going on roller coasters with kids. I've seen pictures.
Yeah.
You know.
And Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah.
You know, he did that, and he never asked for any publicity on it. Nor did we, you know, did our PR people really, you know, make it a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
Eric helped a lot of people out. And he always had money, and he always had this giant wad of hundreds or whatever in his sock. I mean, he used to roll with so much money, it was crazy. And he took care of a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, that's something that needs to be told. And here's another thing. Okay, you had Ice Cube with the No Vaseline. You had the Dre Day thing, the Suge Knight beating incident. Where was real motherfucking G's?
Yeah.
You know? Where was Rhythm D? Where was Cocaine? Where was Dirty Red? All these guys. BG Knockout. You don't hear nothing.
You don't see any of that. You don't see any of that.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Well, look at it again. This was produced by Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, and Tamika. So you're going to get what they want you to see. And I look again. I loved the movie, and what I saw, the majority of it, I loved. And the thing is, people are calling bullshit on bullshit so much now that it's going to be obvious what was real and what wasn't. A lot of the key people that were closest to Eric never got interviewed, or they didn't ask him about anything. I even read where Dre and Q didn't agree with most of what Tamika said was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, of course, I imagine they butted heads a lot. Imagine if they had Jerry on there. Jerry would have been like, no, you ain't gonna fucking dog me like that. I asked Jerry if he could whoop Ice Cube a couple years ago, and he said, oh, maybe 20 years ago we would have had a celebrity boxing match, but not now. How's Jerry doing, by the way? He called into our 200th episode, said that he recently had surgery. Is he doing better?
No, Jerry's great. Jerry moved to a really nice place in Westlake Village. He's on this lake. He's happy. He went through a terrible divorce. I actually introduced him to his wife. Okay, so, and they had many good years, but like many of us do, you know, it doesn't always end up good. So, he went through a terrible divorce. That's over with. Everything is done. It cost him a ton of money, you know, and he's now settled in a new place. He's very happy, and he's been working on another major production of the Ruthless book, his book about his life and the whole NWEZ thing with a company kind of like a Showtime HBO thing.
Wow.
So,
okay.
You know, I'm hoping and praying that this comes to fruition and happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. His life is iconic. Like you said, he was making moves in the 60s with Creedence and the likes of people like that. I mean, you know, do a movie on him. Shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a character, all right.
Yeah. But what about you, Gary? What are you doing these days, you know?
Well, I tell you, about 3 years ago, and I also, again, I managed Flesh and Bone for 12 years. I managed a guy named Damon Elliott, Dionne Warwick's son, who produced Beyonce, Pink, Destiny's Child. We had songs in about 12 movies, so I did a lot of that. I was Matthew Knowles' partner for about 6 months. We were going to start a management firm just for producers. He was trying to basically steal Damon from me, and Damon didn't want to go for it, so we ended up figuring maybe we would co-manage Damon, and I bring in some more people. So the first guy I go to was Will.i.am, who before the Black Eyed Peas blew up. So we have Will ready to sign, the Underdogs ready to sign. There's a guy, JR, I can't even remember his name, but this guy ended up being huge. And Matthew basically let that whole thing never happen. So I did a lot of music stuff, but 3 years ago, my mom had stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and one of my friends is a registered nurse, and she said the best thing for your mom's cancer was a thing called Kangen water, K-A-N-G-E-N water.
Uh-huh.
I never heard of it. I didn't know what she was talking about, but so I research it, and I find a distributor. I start drinking it. I learn about it. 41-year-old Japanese company, a medical device in Japan, in hospitals in Japan. It's this water that you use. It's a water ionizer. You hook it up your faucet, and it changes the water molecules to basically the healthiest water in the world, alkaline, antioxidant, microclustered water. So when I found out about this technology and this company and the philosophy behind it and everything, I really decided I would much rather do something like this instead of dealing with a bunch of knuckleheads in the music industry.
Now, I agree with you on that, man.
You know, you're only as good as your act is, and you could get fired at any moment for nothing, you know,
right.
And thank the job. So I figured I'd rather try to help people and make a living doing it, and, you know, I'm looking at the ocean right now. You know, it really has improved my life financially, physically. I've helped a lot of my friends out. You know, we sold a lot of machines, and that's what I'm doing now. And I'm also a singer. I've been singing, you know, my whole life. So even back when I worked at Ruthless, you know, I do classic rock, Beatles, Stones, Eagles, Motown, and Easy would come out to my shows. Bone Thugs would come out to my shows. David Gilmour from Pink Floyd would, you know, I had a lot of people would come out, and I'm actually waiting to go sing right now. And I do Straight Outta Compton. I rap Gangsta Gangster, Boys in the Hood. You know, so it's kind of funny.
Do it all, huh?
Old white 63-year-old dude, you know, going from, like, yesterday to, you know, cruising down the street in my sixth floor, jacking the pictures. So that's what I do now. I live out in Oxnard, Channel Islands with my girlfriend Mary Lou, and we're loving life.
Well, I'm glad you're loving life, man. And do me a favor, if you can, inbox me some info on that water, because my father has stage 4 prostate cancer. So, I totally know about what you went through with your mother. So.
Yeah, well, that's great, you know, because that's what it's for, is to really help people out. And, you know, this water, it lets your body... It neutralizes the acid in your body. It hydrates you better than any other water. You know, it's an antioxidant. So, I'll give you the information. Also, you could go to my website, GaryBallon.com. And I've got, like, where I sing at. I got blogs about me working with Easy and NWA and Air Supply. I was with them for 3 years and... You know, hanging out with David Gilmour from Pink Floyd, and, you know, kind of the stuff I've done in my life, I got on my website, and there's information about the water there also.
That's GaryBallon.com. That's B-A-L-L-E-N.
Yeah, B-A-L-L-E-N.
Definitely. I really appreciate.
They call me Big Baller Shot Caller, you know.
Well, yeah, when you're cruising in your 6-foot, I mean, you can only be a baller, right?
But
thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And again, sorry for the technical difficulties over at Blog Talk. They run a whack fucking site. Whenever they do some type of a update or something, it screws everything up. So it's not the first time this has happened, but we really appreciate you. We'll up this interview. And we'll have it out probably tonight or first thing in the morning.
Cool. Well, it was my pleasure talking to you guys. And, you know, I hope I shed some light on some things that, especially in the movie, that, you know, really didn't happen.
Well, I think you clarified things. And you know, there's always several sides to a story. And whenever one side is told and several other sides are not told, people want to hear those other sides, and we thank you for sharing your side of the story, man. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Have a great night, guys.